Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
You know, in 1988, Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock said, "It takes two to make a thing go right. It takes two to make it out of sight. Hit it!" I think they were right, because there's no Chris again this week. I don't feel like calling this episode 16. We're not quite there yet, because it takes two. I want to rock right now. I'm Rob Bass, and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone. So without Chris, I don't want to call this episode 16. I just want to do something. It's Monday, goddammit. We come out every Monday. Something better be on your iTunes. So I'm going to deliver. And what I'm going to deliver is, I've got a bottle of wine. Some of the worst wine I've ever had. It's called Backhouse Pinot Grigio. If you ever find yourself with a bottle of Backhouse, take it behind your house and shoot it, because that's better than drinking it. But because I am so dedicated to you and dedicated to this show's new identity as a drinking podcast, I decided to try and finish this thing off and sit down with the mic and just rap at you in some Tanner time, some one-on-one podcasting time. The other thing about this, it's like 8 p.m. I got to work tomorrow after a long holiday break. I really, really want to be playing Last of Us right now. Desperately, because god damn, people, that game is good. It is so good. And I want to be playing it, but I'm dedicated to you. I know your life depends on hearing me every week. And I'm going to deliver. So what I'm going to do is just talk about some stuff that's on my mind and try to relate it to the subject of this podcast, which is supposed to be dumb games, goddammit. Exploring the dumbness of games and games themselves. So let me take a swig of this wine. Yep. Let's go.
Hit it.
I played some Left 4 Dead 2 with Chris's brother and friend of the show, El Waxo, or Waxo on Twitch TV. You'd probably see him. He has his own Twitch stream. You should check it out. It's like W-A-X-X-O. And he's also commonly in our Twitch channel. Anyway, us four sat down with some Left 4 Dead 2 on Friday night, I think it was. We're playing some user-generated maps, a Helm's Deep map, where you just basically sit in a rough recreation of the Helm's Deep castle from Lord of the Rings and just fight off hordes of zombies as they come charging through. We didn't do too well. We tried. Failed. But then we ended up playing one of the base missions of Left 4 Dead 2. Actually, now that I think about it, it was a Left 4 Dead 1 mission. It's called No Mercy. It's one of the best finales to a Left 4 Dead campaign, where you find yourself up on a rooftop and you've got a radio for a helicopter to come in. Of course, it takes some time for that helicopter to come in. In the meantime, you get assaulted on this rooftop and there's a two-story structure you can hide in with a turret gun on top, or there are a bunch of other little spots littered around the map you can take position in with some Molotov cocktails and that kind of stuff and try to hold off until this helicopter arrives. I was in the mood to fuck around, though, that night, and I kept trying to screw everything up for everybody, just running off, going in random directions, entering a closet, shutting the door and just sitting there, instituting a rule in which I would never stop running through a map. I think it was equal parts annoying and funny, I hope. And when we got to this rooftop finale of No Mercy, I decided to run off and explore the edges of the map, which rarely in that map you would ever go on the edges. You want to kind of get to the central area and hole up there and defend yourselves. And certainly the way the map is set up is that's kind of the idea. It's like, okay, let's all get here. Let's all get all our gear together. Someone click the radio button and we'll fight these zombies. But I was like, fuck this. I'm running off and exploring what the hell's on the edge of this map. Lo and behold, I find this little pocket down a few levels in a way on the rooftop. There's this little outcrop in the back quarter of the level that I decided just to park my ass at, crouch, and wait it out and see what happened while everyone else was off fighting the way you're supposed to fight. What ended up happening was Waxo died early on, so he then gets to view what's taking place, and he's scoping me out while Chris and his brother are off fighting zombies the traditional style. I'm sitting on this little outcrop that became known as The Ledge, capital T, capital L. And Waxo's watching me from above as zombies, you know, intuitively know I'm there. You know, the AI is sent to attack you, but they just keep, they run so fast, they pick up so much speed that they just launch themselves over the edge. It's as if I'm Daniel Day-Lewis kissing that chick in Last of the Mohicans underneath the waterfall. And that waterfall are zombified bodies. And I'm just sitting there. I'm shooting people now and then. I'm using my little katana to slice them as they fall over. But it dawned on me that, hey, this might actually, this is, listen, it's a terrible strategy, but this might actually be kind of a fun way to go about this level. It's like, sit down here and try to figure this exploit out and see if we can manage it. I ended up convincing everyone with Waxo's help to just commit to the ledge out of no reason, but goddammit, it was fun. So everyone ends up going, yep, all right. We're going to run, hit that radio button, get on the ledge, and just see what happens. And you know what happened? The game got so much more fun. And I was thinking about this. We weren't succeeding. We never got very far. We got fairly close, but inevitably, a tank comes, one of the special zombies comes and slams you and throws people off the roof. There was no real hope of succeeding via this strategy. It was a horrible strategy to begin with. But we were taking the game and kind of mutating it a bit, rewriting its rules, and just creating a kind of metagame, an overarching game structure over that base game, just to breathe new life into it, to make it a bit more fun and crazy and laughable. And I was thinking about how this connects to episode 4 in the final segment of that podcast. I was talking about a Mario Kart clone called Street Racer and talking about how back when I was playing that game in the mid-90s or whatever with my friend John, that we ended up not playing that game at all at how you were supposed to. We would turn around and not race. We would instead just try to knock the AI racers out of the area of the map. And I was thinking, this is kind of, here I am, 30-whatever years old, and I'm doing the same stuff. I was thinking, this has to have some kind of significance, because clearly, while we were playing, Chris's compulsion is, let's do this level right. Let's try to figure out the right strategy. Let's play this game the way it's meant to be played, and let's try to succeed. And that is the sensible way to play that game, and that's the way I ultimately began playing the game. I would always try to play it right. But I get this itch in me to fuck with shit. To kind of try and manipulate systems against themselves. And to me, this is one of the most wonderful things about games. And I think this connects to the idea of dumb games and why I love dumb games so much, is that dumb games are broken and mangled and crazy and stupid and funny. A game like Left 4 Dead really isn't that. It's incredibly well made. It's super polished. It's got brilliant level design. It works the way it's intended. And certainly it's fun to play it as it's meant to be played. But also what's really goddamn fun is fucking all that up. Trying to find the edges of something and break through the membrane of the game in a way like I did in Street Racer. And I realized that that's what I was doing in that Left 4 Dead level, was I immediately went to the edges and was like, what can be fucked with here? And finding that ledge and then declaring it, creating a cult of the ledge in a way, and just embracing the dumbness of the strategy and setting this arbitrary point where this is where we make our stand, boys, adds this whole other layer of dumbness on a brilliant game that is Left 4 Dead and just makes it so much more fun to me. I think this might be what the way games really are meant to be played. If you try to really break it down, games are notoriously hard to define, but I think the best definition I heard, and I'm sad I can't attribute it to someone, but the best definition of a game that I've heard is that it's simply an organization of play. Play is this wonderful, amorphous, undefinable, eternal thing. And what games do is they come along and they rope it off. They compose it like a symphony director. They say, here's all this chaotic play, and I'm going to organize it in this fashion, and here is a game for you. Digital games, video games, seem to be some of the most oppressive ways to organize play, because they're notoriously hard to fuck with. They're hard-coded. They run on hardware. They're incredibly complex and difficult to make and then have copy protection and ways to prevent you from manipulating them. Of course, there's modders. There's exploits to find. There's cheat codes. But the game itself is this kind of fixed entity in some way. Whereas a different organization of play, say a schoolyard game, is constantly under negotiation and renegotiation. And it's often a kind of cooperative experience where the players are the designers. So you can come along and say, you know how we've been playing tag here? How about if we did this? The other kids say, sure. And then you try it. Game like Left 4 Dead, that's a bit harder to do. You can create new maps. You can create little mods and modifications. But that no mercy level is the no mercy level. But my compulsion is always to say, yeah, but what if we messed it up a little bit? How can we put a new spin? And that's what the ledge became to me. It became this way of asserting some authorship into the experience and making it, doing something to make it a dumb game and to make myself and everyone else laugh. And I don't know about them, but to me, it suddenly, we were just playing the game. We were having a pretty good time as we were playing, enjoying the experience. But once we started manning that ledge, and of course I went to my iPad, fired up Aerosmith's Living on the Edge and broadcasted it over Skype as the bodies are flying over us and all four of us are trying to desperately cling to that ledge and see the level through in this absurd strategy. What ended up happening was there was a certain energy to it. There was a sense of novelty and excitement because we were asserting our agency in some way. We're regaining control of that game from itself and saying, you know what, damn it, you're a good game, but let's be dumb here for a little bit. So thinking about the ledge got me thinking about something else. A non-digital form of play from when I was young. Back behind one of my best friend's houses was something we called the woods, which was just a small forested area surrounding a reservoir that separated the subdivision I lived in and my friend lived in from the city street further away. It wasn't large, but it was just large enough so that you felt like you could get lost in it. You could probably walk through the woods from end to end in about 30 to 40 minutes based on the kind of brush you ran into. If you got a machete with you and a Sherpa, you're set. But what we do in the woods is get all dressed up in army surplus gear and act like we were Green Berets on some kind of important mission. We had bases littered throughout the woods that we codenamed things. There were the requisite questionable porn mags stashed in some little grassy knoll by God knows who, some sad sack that had to go out in the woods to masturbate. Can you imagine that life? But he was doing everyone a service, you know, young boys, by showing them the world. But my point is that with the ledge, we created this kind of metagame around Left 4 Dead. And what we did with our little Green Beret roleplay, which we ended up calling CCC, or the Chaos Conductors Club, was we ended up creating a game system. We took the play that was the woods. Play was inherent to the woods. And we systematized it by creating this Chaos Conductors Club. And more importantly, constructing this mythology around this house that was in the woods. By far, one of the coolest things about this woods was this house. You know, I often describe to other people, my childhood was like a truly ideal childhood in that I had the ideal little suburban block with a group of ideal friends, all the same age. Halloween, first of all, occurred at fucking night instead of during the day. And was absolute mayhem. Kids were everywhere. Kids were stealing candy. There were people jumping off roofs to scare you. It was mayhem in the best way possible. But we also had this woods, and not only did we have the woods and there was porn in it, but there was a goddamn creepy house in the woods. This stuff is the stuff of legend, of lore, of Stephen King. It is the dream of every kid to have a woods with a creepy house in it. And not only was it a creepy house, but one creepy old man lived in this house. I shit you not. And of course, it became the mission of the Chaos Conductors Club to weave crazy tales of this guy's madness, his evil, wicked ways, which we had no substantiation for, but this was part of the game we had created. We were weaving a narrative about this guy, imagining him as this awful person. All we really knew about him was sometimes late at night, we'd be sitting in my friend's room and you'd hear music waft through the woods. A kind of orchestral polka style music that to our kid ears, when we were sitting there listening to CNC Music Factory, To our kid ears, this music was very strange and seemed ancient. It would carry through the woods in this very eerie way. And we'd look out my friend's window, and just through the trees, you could see the white house with the lights lit up in it and this music blaring through. It was utterly bizarre and spooky in the best way possible. Of course, the Chaos Conductors Club had to keep this house strictly monitored, and we did. We sent up many missions in which we just kind of surrounded the house in our fatigues and our walkie-talkies, eventually even knocking on his door once, but him not ever coming. We never actually saw him close up. And eventually the music stopped, and strange cars appeared that looked to be family, and the house sat vacant for months and months. I can't remember if we organized this like a Black Ops mission, but we broke into the house, having seen it stand there unattended for so long. We had to enter. I don't remember how we got in. It wasn't like we broke windows or anything. The door may have even been open, and we just walked in. Of course, the electricity wasn't on, but the house was full of stuff. It had not been vacated in a systematic manner. He hadn't been moved out in any way. Even though the house sat for months and months, no one had come by really to clear it out. It was just as if it was this absurd piece of property in this wood, in this forested area. At that point in time, it would be absurd for someone to move in there. It was a bygone era. It was a relic. And within it, it was like almost a museum, a preserved archive of this old man's life. And we went through it still with this sense of mystery, but also this weird sense of loss and invasion. You know, we understood that we were, at least very quickly upon entering the house, we kind of understood what we were doing, that this was a life that we were intruding upon. And the game that we had constructed, this idea of us as these Green Berets, him as this great evil that we were going to uncover and apprehend, the game kind of faded away and it got very real. Certainly it was fun and exhilarating to be in this guy's house, but once you started looking at what he had and we started realizing that he was clearly an old Polish man, there were Polish language things in the house, you know, various ephemera of his life. I think there was still food in the fridge that had gone rotten. We're seeing the places he would travel, where he slept and where he would go. The fabric of the game kind of shredded and faded away. And here it was, you know, here was a guy at the end of his life and us just at the beginning. And usually, you know, we had broken into dilapidated houses in the past in the forest and just run amok in there. And to my memory, we didn't quite do the same in this guy's house. The game was no longer being played. That zone of playfulness that the woods had created didn't quite take hold in the same way in this place. And we explored it and we left and never went back. Years later, that house, along with all of the woods, would get bought and razed, and condominiums were built. And now kids in those condominiums, instead of going to the woods, of course, sign on Xbox Live, fire up Call of Duty, get matched with me in a 5v5, and call me a dickhead. So they've got that going for them, at least. I hope you enjoyed that. That's Super Dumb Games for this week. We will be back, I promise you, next Monday with a proper episode 16 with me and Chris. We're also hoping on getting some new video content out and doing a double impact really soon. So keep your eyes on the YouTube channel. Of course, go to superdumbgames.com. Subscribe to all those social media links on the left and follow us. And if you feel like it, go to iTunes, look up Super Dumb Games, and write a review. We'd appreciate it. See you next Monday.